You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council and also by New Futures.
It's New Hampshire Now on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. This hour of the program brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as New England College. And this segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heat, and Air Conditioning. That's who my family trusts to call for all our plumbing, heat, and air conditioning needs. I encourage you to experience the Paradigm Shift by checking out ParadigmPH.com. We head back out on the campaign trail now for a conversation with U.S. Senator Michael Bennet from Colorado. Bennet was recently diagnosed with prostate cancer and is going to undergo surgery here in the next week or so. And then it is expected to continue on if he's given a clear bill of health and run for president of the United States. We sat down in Nashua. Again, New Hampshire primary interviews on the program presented by Rath, Young, and Pignatelli. And interviews on the campaign trail brought to you by New Futures. So we're joined by U.S. Senator Michael Bennet from Colorado here at Jaja Bells on the campaign trail in Nashua on the program today. And first off, talk about what is driving your decision here and what is driving you to want to pursue the presidency.
Well, everything that I've done in my life has been about trying to create more opportunity for the next generation, you know, whether I've been in business or running the Denver Public Schools as a superintendent. And I think this is just a critical moment in our country's history. I think it's really important for people to level with the American people about the challenges that we face, which are considerable, the issues in our economy and in our democracy that we have to overcome if we're going to continue to honor the legacy of our parents and grandparents and preserve this exercise in self-government for another generation and drive economic growth for everybody in the country. And as I've seen the race go, I've felt like I'm not hearing that necessarily out of other candidates, and I think there's a real opportunity to contribute, and that's what I want to do.
When you look at Buttigieg and Beto, two individuals have drawn a tremendous amount of attention and have come, you know, one is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who's the longest of long shots coming into this race, and Beto obviously is kind of a phenomenon. Do you look at that and get, you know, disappointed that individuals that don't have the substance and the amount of time spent in public service are rising to the forefront, or do you look at that and say anybody at this point can have a moment where they rise?
I look at it and say anybody can have a moment, and I look at it and say to myself, somebody's going to need to earn this nomination. You know, I think Democrats are going to want to know that the person they nominate can take on Donald Trump, and it's going to be hard. There are a lot of people in the race, and we're going to see ups and downs. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be given to anybody. And when I see somebody like Mayor Pete, whom I like, I know him well. I don't know Beto. I've met him a couple of times and have been interested by other people about what that phenomenon is all about. But with Mayor Pete, I know him. He's a guy that has a point of view. You know, he's been a mayor. He's done hard work. He's been a veteran. And he knows what he thinks. And to see people responding to that is actually quite gratifying to me, because I feel like I've got a point of view. I know what I think. I may not be one of the best known people in the race. In fact, I know I'm certainly not one of the best known people in the race. But I think people's minds are wide open, and that creates a lot of interesting opportunity.
So the policy side is what's driving you the most, in that you don't feel that there's enough, particularly on education, which you talked about here, there's enough conversation in regards to that, and if you do not have success, you want to be able to change the dialogue?
Well, I would say, first of all, I hope to have success, because I wouldn't want to do it if I didn't have it. If I didn't think I had a chance to win, I wouldn't run. There are other things that I could do. I think there is a chance that I could win. And if I did, what I'd be focused on is what I talked about here, not just education, but the fact that for the last 40 years we've seen stagnant incomes for 90% of Americans, and I've got ideas about what we could do to change the child tax credit and the earned income tax credit to really increase the take-home pay of people, not just annually, but on a monthly basis, that really would be a great, not only great benefit to working people in the country, but a shock in the arm to the economy generally. I guess on the point of, you know, if I lost, my daughter said to me once, "Dad, if you ran and you tell the truth and you lose, nobody can fault you for it." And I said to her, "You know what, Caroline? That's good, because the way I think about this is there's no other way for me to win but to tell the truth. There's no other reason for me to be in the race." You know,
one of the driving questions that a lot of Democratic activists have here is
which of these candidates can defeat Donald Trump. And that seems to be kind of the first and foremost in regards to their mindset. This is a very policy-oriented race so far, but that's at the forefront. In your view, how do you go about doing that? What about your skill set would allow you to have success against him, and how do you go about engaging or not engaging with Donald Trump?
I think that, as I said earlier, I think that is the number one threshold question that people are going to decide this election on the whole nominating process, but certainly here in New Hampshire, I think in Iowa as well, and the other early states. I think what I have to offer in that regard is that I have deep policy knowledge. I've thought about this stuff a long time, and I don't think Donald Trump is going to get away with the kind of lies that he's told if somebody like me is on the debate stage with him. You know, he intimidates people that are in his orbit, and I don't feel intimidated by him. I feel outraged by the extent to which he lies to the American people and covers stuff up. Healthcare is the latest great example. It's not the only example. But here's a guy who ran saying, now the first step, by the way, of beating him is reminding people what he said when he ran. It's not a blank slate. He said, in saying we should repeal Obamacare and all that stuff, I'm going to give you this beautiful healthcare system. You're going to love this healthcare system. It's going to be so cheap. It's going to cover everybody. It's going to be easy. And now, 2 years into his presidency, all he's done is try to take insurance away from 20 million people and take it away from people who have pre-existing conditions. And now, 1 week, he says, I'm going to deliver for you now. The next week, he says, it'll be after I get reelected. I mean, this is the kind of stuff where he has to be held to account for what he said. And the American people need to understand that he's lied to them over and over and over again, and we can't accept that in our president. You know, I realize, look, I've worked there for 10 years. I know how messed up the place is. It's a disgrace in many ways. But the fact that it is a disgrace can't repel us. It has to be an invitation for us to make it better, to improve it. I just, you know, as the father of three kids, can't accept the idea that this country's political system is going to accept that it's damaged in the way that it is forever. I mean, your political system's not damaged this way in New Hampshire. Our political system in Colorado is not. The school district, the city and county that I worked in is not. Yet we've allowed Washington to get overcome by a set of forces that are mostly interested in preserving the status quo for the wealthiest interests in the country and not doing what's right for the American people. We can't treat that as a foregone conclusion, I guess, is my point, you know?
Yeah, a couple of things off of that. First, your speech that you gave during the shutdown in which you called out Senator Cruz is one of the best floor speeches I've seen because of the depth of knowledge and the passion that you exhibited during that, throwing in facts such as the Denver airport being the last airport to be modernized in the country, but those 25 years ago. Is that the type of candidacy that you would have? Do you, a strong and vigorous and angry, fact-filled type of?
People ask me, they said, was that speech spontaneous? And it was spontaneous in the sense that I went out to the floor expecting to vote and to go somewhere else. I wasn't expecting to go after Ted Cruz. And in fact, there were two other Republicans that made the same point that he made, and I didn't go after them. But I went after him because my state was flooded when he shut the government down. I know what he cost my state. But in my mind, I'd spent the last 2 years writing a book about what that speech is about. That's what my book is about. So in that sense, it wasn't spontaneous, but it is what this campaign would be about. Take another example, by the way, that I didn't use in the speech, but I've been thinking about recently. We've just consumed at least 4 months, maybe 5 months, of the American people's time over this foolishness at the rinky-dink wall and the $6 billion, while China has, you know, in 3 years has used more concrete than we used in the entire 20th century. I think it's actually twice as much. While China is building fiber optic cable 3,500 miles to link Latin America and Africa and China, while we can't even provide high-speed internet to rural America. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the stuff we should be focused on. That $5 trillion I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you were here for that. I mean, that shows you the cost of distraction, the cost of not actually holding people accountable to the promises that they make. And yeah, that's the kind of stuff I want to raise.
Another big undercurrent, and I think something that will be at the forefront when all is said and done in regards to this primary is the same thing that drove the 2016 election with Bernie Sanders and also Donald Trump and their rise to the forefront, and that is this feeling that large corporations and political individuals fight for themselves and leave the American people kind of on the sidelines. And that has created a lot of what you're talking about before with the lack of the income stagnation. How do you address that? And how do you address the fact that millions and millions of Americans feel that the political system is so corrupt and is so run by the corporations that their stake, their voice doesn't matter, and so they're willing to vote for or do anything as a result? And I think it's one of the big driving factors in President Trump's election in hoping to change.
No doubt about it. So my my state's a third Republican, third Democrat, third Independent. And I know lots of people that voted for Donald Trump. I meet them all the time. And I say, why did you vote for Donald Trump? And they say, because we wanted to blow it up. We wanted to blow it up. And I then say to them, congratulations, you achieved what you wanted. Now what are we going to do? Because if we want our kids to remember us well, it's not just enough for us to blow it up. There have been all kinds of moments in the country's history. I mean, we used to enslave human beings in the United States. I was talking about that earlier. Women didn't have the right to vote. Schools were segregated, as in many ways they still are today, by the way. There are all kinds of issues that we've contended with. There have been corrupt governments before, where Teddy Roosevelt had to leave a whole progressive agenda to overcome it, to bust the trust and do all of that. I mean, it's in our hands. That's the great thing about being in a democracy. I think people can get discouraged because, the cable is not the most inspiring stuff to watch at night. Social media is so corrosive. It's a fact of life, but it's incredibly corrosive. I think we're best to best when we're face-to-face, working with each other. And that's what campaigns are all about. So, again, I could be accused of being naive, but I don't think there's any other way out of it except for Americans to do their duty and to say, look, we're done with this foolishness. And it wasn't just Trump. It's the stuff that led to Trump. He's a symptom of the problems that we have. We're not going to accept an idea that either that our democracy can no longer make decisions in the face of China doing what they're doing, in the face of Iran doing what they're doing, in the face of Russia doing what they're doing. And even more important than that, we're not going to accept the fact that we can't fulfill our legacy as Americans to leave the next generation in better shape. Mm-hmm. There are people who commonly say these days, well, there's a worldwide market for labor. You got the Chinese, technology. No one in my state wants to accept that we are permanently reduced to a world where when the economy grows, there isn't broad distribution of that growth. They want to see that. And I think they're right to say Washington hasn't paid any attention. She had the greatest point in the world, the woman sitting over against the wall who said, why is it that Washington's priorities never seem to be our priorities? There's a reason for that. It's a special interest. It's the money in our politics. And just like Teddy Roosevelt went after it when he was running, we need somebody to go after it now.
Filing, is this a generational change, though, where President Obama ran on being an individual who's going to bring transformational change? Obviously, for multiple reasons, that did not take place. Donald Trump ran as an individual who's going to drain the swamp, create transformational change. The status quo is obviously strong. So does it take a president to start this process, and does this need to be something that's going to take generations to shift?
I often make that point, so you've just made it for me, and I didn't make it tonight. Here, this is not going to be about one election. These challenges that we've faced have been 40 years in the making, and what we need, I think, is a president who begins to drag us out of the morass that we're in right now. Not just the Trump morass, but the morass of imagining that it's impossible for us to have different opinions in this country and not take those disagreements, not fashion a lazy compromise or fashion some, stupid splitting the difference between two parties obsolete ideas, but take the energy of that disagreement and actually make it into something we can be proud of. That's the way we used to do it around here. And I think we need the next president to be somebody who can say that's our job as Americans, just like the founders did and the people that came after them who also, you know, I think of as founders. If you think of ourselves, the role of a citizen with that sort of elevated standard, the standard of a founder, which is what, from the point of view of people who are going to be living here 100 years from now, we actually are, I think it throws in pretty stark relief how empty our politics is and how pathetic the partisan nature of it is. And by the way, it also suggests that maybe we shouldn't always be coming with the set in stone policy idea, but we should actually be open to hearing what voters are thinking about and what their opinions are as we run a campaign like this and as we govern after the campaign's over.
Senator Bennett, thanks so much. We'll go to see you again soon.
Yeah, you're wonderful to have me. Thanks. Look forward to seeing you too.
That is Michael Bennett, U.S. Senator from Colorado, looking at running for president of the United States. New Hampshire primary interviews on the program brought to you by Rathjung and Pignatelli, and interviews on the campaign trail presented by New Futures. Educate, advocate, collaborate. New Futures. This hour of the Hampshire Now program brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health as well as New England College, and that segment of the show presented by Paradigm Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We'll come back with more on the New Hampshire Now program after this.
You're listening to New Hampshire Now, presented by the New Hampshire College and University Council and also by New Futures.